Chinwag. Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang. Welcome along to Chinwag with yours truly, Sister Bang Bang of the Manchester Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Stand by for lots of malicious gossip, wicked chit-chat,
and nothing but the whole truth.
No way.
It's Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang.
What's more?
Today's show contains words of wisdom, sublime words, and rude words too. So if you're of a nervous disposition, fly away, my pretty. If, however, you're made of sterner stuff, then settle back for another fabulous edition of...
Well, hello, kids. How are you? I've had such a busy day, I've had to drag on my very best habit, as I've got the chance to sit down and chinwag with another sister of perpetual indulgence from Manchester. Now, my big sister, Jackie Morph, love her to death, helped me kickstart chinwag back in episode one. But now it's time to hear from one of our older sisters in our wonderful order who also edits our parish magazine. You can download it from our website. And also, she's the editrix of the Grand Polari Bible. If you don't know what that is, stay tuned. As usual, I began our shenanigans with those immortal words. Who the hell are you?
I'm systematic debauchery of the eccentric dancing habit. Mistress of Polari, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence of Manchester.
That's quite a title. How do you fit that all onto your business card, darling?
I don't. I just write my number on the cubicle wall at the Rembrandt. Everybody's got my number, love.
Well, you have been going a while, haven't you, dear?
Oh, since the old king's time, yes. Yes, I'm actually in quite a happy reverie. We're here in Manchester's glamorous Piccadilly, and I was just thinking of the time when I filleted a young Canadian gentleman around the back of Piccadilly Station many years ago. That was a fun evening.
Was there a satisfactory conclusion to that?
There certainly was, yes. I enjoyed it anyway. I don't know how... Well, I presume he enjoyed it, actually. But anyway, I digress. My memory fades with time.
Better to bring it up now and record it for posterity, then.
Indeed, yes. That was a long time ago. I've quietened down a little since then. I just can't kneel down these days as much as I could due to the arthritis, you know.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? We can kneel down, but it's difficult getting back up.
Yes. Although I find if I hold on to the Zimmer frame, I can sort of pull myself up quite nicely.
So let's rewind a little for you, Systematic, because we all had a beginning, we all had a start. What was yours?
What was my start? Well, many years ago, 25 or so years ago, I read a book called The Cuckoo's Egg by a chap called Clifford Stoll, which is actually, it's a true story about computer espionage, but set in San Francisco in the mid-80s. And in it, Clifford Stoll mentions going down the Castro with his girlfriend and seeing the nuns lip-syncing. And that's just sort of a throwaway remark in the book, and it sort of, but it planted a seed. And nearly 20 years ago, my brother bought me a copy of Castle's Queer Compendium by William Stewart, who used to present Blockbusters, by the way.
At the TV programme on British TV.
Indeed.
And you've happened to have a copy of that book right here.
I have it chained to my waist. Anyway, it's an A to Z of, well, what in those days would be called LGB things. And these days will be LGBTZQR star X P exclamation mark, or whatever this week's politically correct acronym is. And it contains this entry on the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Worldwide Order of Gay Male Nuns. The original sisters, such as Sister Boom Boom and Sister Sadie the Rabbi Lady, began to appear on the scene in San Francisco in the 1970s, where their visible mix of habits and facial hair on demonstrations, with their motto of "Give up the guilt," helped boost the eccentric image of the city. In the 1980s, With the emotional burden imposed by AIDS, their ministering was desperately needed, and they were known for their hospital visits as well as their efforts to spread the safe sex message. In the UK, the sisters conducted Operation Rubber Habit in 1994 to take the good news about condoms into London gay clubs. They have also conducted exorcisms of places and institutions possessed by the demon of homophobia. I'll come on to that later. A bit of a sticking point for the media, which, though fascinated, never seemed to appreciate the joke. The phrase homosexual men dressed as nuns doesn't quite communicate their sheer fabularity. Anyway, so this got me thinking about the sisters. Oh, what a fantastic organisation. But I'd never, even though it mentioned Operation Rubber Habit, it never occurred to me that they're in the UK. And then back in 1999, I was wandering down Canal Street on the, it was the Sunday of Mardi Gras, as it was in those days, still absolutely drug-fucked from the night before. I'd had a big night out. And outside the Rembrandt, so on the junction of Sackville Street and Canal Street, which is like the gayest bit of Manchester, were these two figures in black, Sister Gypsy and Sister Gronya. And my recollection is I went up to them and said, "Excuse me, are you the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence?" Whereas their recollection is, I went up and said, "You! It's you, you're them, aren't they? It's you! You're them! You're... Calm down, dear." And so, like every other sister before or since, had a chat with them and then went and met up with the other nuns at a business meeting called a Nunsion, where it's sort of a... They want to find out why you want to join and tell you, they want to tell you a bit about the sisters. Then had my tryout in Habit, which was always a bit of an experience because it sort of separates the men from the boys, as it were. And then presented with my Habit, so I became a novice sister in 2000, April 1st, 2000 it would be. And then was professed in, I think, 2002 sometime. I became a fully professed black veil sister. So I've been a full sister now for 14 years.
But how much of your expectation equaled the reality of what you became as a sister?
Oh, goodness. The sisters is one of the most eccentric, bizarre ends of the gay activist spectrum that you will ever come across. In my life, I've had several deeply surreal experiences, and they've all been as systematic. And I think the thing is, when you become a sister, it's impossible for you to know exactly what it's going to be like, except it's going to be absolutely fabulous if you're the right sort of personality to do it. It doesn't suit everybody. You need to have a sort of a... You need to have a drag sensibility, but there's a lot more to it than just drag. You know, because there's the pastoral work, there's activism, there's education, there's all sorts goes on. So the screeching about in a frock is a means to an end. It's not the end itself. So it's been an absolutely amazing few years. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Met some very, very good friends who are now sort of firm friends outside the sisters as well. And it's been a good thing. I've enjoyed it. It wouldn't suit everybody, but it suits me.
Well, you've told me a lot. You know, since I came to be a sister, I'm obviously the newest one in the Manchester crowd. And it's amazing how many different levels there are, isn't it? I've talked about this many, many times, about the fact that we're a little community on ourselves and we support ourselves and we look after our other sisters as well, isn't it? So it's not just the outreach work that we do. Is there a such thing as in-reach work as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's none of the sisters is entirely sane, it has to be said. And we The analogy which Sister Martini often uses is the sisters are actually like a family. It is like having real sisters. Because, you know, you sometimes squabble, you sometimes have favourites, whatever, you sometimes disagree. But in the end, you all pull together. And there's a huge amount of sort of mutual support goes on, not just within the Manchester house, but within the other house. So, I mean, there are a couple of other houses in the UK. There's also houses worldwide, obviously in places like the States. Unfortunately, the nature of the sisters is that a number of the houses sort of tend to go defunct, which has happened, for example, in London, the London House, sadly, who founded the Manchester House. Shortly after the Manchester House was founded, most of the members of the London House sadly succumbed to a visit from Auntie Ada and became nuns of the above. But it's still quite an active organisation worldwide. It was really defined by its work in the 1980s with HIV/AIDS. And a lot of the older nuns, I suppose myself included, I'm not one of the older nuns, came to it very much from a sort of an activism perspective rather than anything else. There was, frankly, a lot to be angry about in the 1990s, much of which, thank goodness, is now much better than it was. But people join it for a variety. People join the sisters for a variety of reasons, and the other thing is that different people who join us bring different skills and sort of different experience. And it's sort of, I think we're successful because we know how to play to each other's skills, and we sort of have complementary skills and complementary personalities.
Well, hopefully,
one would hope so. Yes. Historically, the sisters collectively haven't tended to be the most organised of people. We have a habit of talking a good gig but not delivering, but fortunately we seem to be getting a bit better organised, particularly with you as you're sort of rapidly turning into the Sergeant Major of the of the house.
Darling, it's like herding
it all in line.
It's like herding cats though.
Like juggling soot. I know that feeling well, but generally, I mean, when we do stuff, we do tend to do it quite well, but what we do tend to do is talk a good gig and go off into flights of fancy, but when we're good, we're fantastic.
Yeah. Yes, we damn well are. Mm. And I suppose, well, how long's the, I know this, but tell it anyway, how long's the Manchester House been going?
Well, the Manchester House started in 1996 at Mardi Gras. It was founded originally by... There were a couple of sisters from London via Oxford via Nottingham called Dottie and Ophelia.
We're going to hear more about the Manchester House and how it formed very shortly indeed. You're listening to Chin Wag with Sister Bang Bang and my lovely guest, Sister Matic.
Hey kids, you know that every episode of Chinwag is done completely free, doesn't cost a penny or a dime, and it's just one of the many ways that we sisters try and entice you to donate money to good causes. So, if you have a few pennies to spare, please go now to our website at www.themanchestersisters.org and just click on one of the donate buttons. Every tiny bit helps, and we rely on your generosity. So donate now at www.themanchestersisters.org. Thank you from the bottom of our goodly hearts.
Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang.
It is Chinwag. It's absolutely correct. And this is Sister Bang Bang chattering away with Sister Matic. Now, Sister Matic, you were telling us about how the Manchester House was formed 20 years ago this year. Nearly.
20 years ago this August bank. So, two London sisters, Sister Dominatrix of the Divine Tongue, also known as Sister Dottie, and Sister Ophelia Balls, who were of the London house, knew David, who would shortly become Sister Anorak of the Cheap Day Return, Sister Annie. And they'd come up to Manchester to do a spot of brass rubbing or something. And eventually, David felt the vacation. And so was basically given his tryout in a frock with Dottie and Ophelia and another London sister called Lily of the Valium. And David became a novice in 1986. And as the only nun in Manchester, he had a lot of support from the London sisters, who would come up every couple of weekends to go out and do stuff, because there's a rule within the sisters that if you're going out, there have to be at least two of you out, and at least one of you has to be black veiled. That is a fully professed sister. The reason being that by the time you've become black veiled, you know how to handle crowds, you know how to sort of head trouble off. So anyway, after Annie entered the novitiate in 1996, isn't it? Yes, sorry. Her partner, Jez, who became Sister Gypsy, after which we had Sister Mary. So Annie and Gypsy used to do the door on Poptastic, which is a gay club night in Manchester. And they were sort of the unofficial door whores who used to enforce dress code, as they put it, in Poptastic, with Gypsy's famous cry of, "Velour is not a fashion, now fuck off." Officially on the door was somebody called Richard, who again felt the calling and became Sister Mary Virgin on the Ridiculous. Then there was Sister Gronya of the Burnished Buttocks joined. So now it's just like the Magnificent Seven forming, isn't it? Sister Gronya of the Burnished Buttocks. Then the wonderful Sister Daisy, who is sadly no longer with us, but she really was a character. Then myself, then Sister Martini. And I was black veiled, I think it's either 2001 or 2002. I actually can't remember particularly. My black veiling, it was actually the first thing that I attended was the unveiling of the Alan Turing statue in Sackville Gardens. And it's a bit bizarre because I'm quite interested in the history of computing, and I'd recently read another biography of Alan Turing. And so I trolled up to this unveiling of the statue in full habit, and there's a TV crew there. And the woman from the TV crew made the mistake of asking me, "So what do you know about Alan Turing?" So I sort of started off saying, "Oh, well, he was born in Little Venice in London in 1924. They went on to talk about computability of finite numbers and the Entscheidungsproblem. And you could see this woman's face sort of glazing over, thinking, "No, this isn't happening. There's somebody dressed as a nun talking about pure mathematics." It's just...
But that
was one of those sort of surreal moments that you have as a nun. There's been all sorts of gigs that we've done, most of which you really have to see the photos of. But one memorable one was blessing a gay sauna in Dewsbury, of all godforsaken places. And then going back a year later to bless the jacuzzi, that was quite a fun gig.
This was in full habit in the jacuzzi, wasn't it?
This was in full habit in the jacuzzi. Yes, with a group of very very nice young gentlemen, including this. He was a banana packer. That was actually his job. That's not a euphemism. A gorgeous, beautiful smile and the dick of death on him. But anyway, so yes, that was an enjoyable time. But it is rather warm in a sauna in full... I mean, it's warm standing out on Canal Street in February in a full habit. So you can imagine what it's like in a bloody sauna.
How long did it take to dry off the habits after you got out of the jacuzzi?
months. Yes, we just had to sort of put them in the tumble dryer when we got back to the convent, I'm afraid.
You're listening to Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang. And it's fascinating to hear all this from Systematic.
Sister Bang Bang's Chinwag.
Joy Bubba. Hi, friends. It's Sister Indica, your homegirl for life. Not only am I gorgeous, not only am I a sister of perpetual indulgence, but I'm also host of the podcast Joy Bomb. I rant and rave about pop culture, politics, music, TV, and more. I interview all sorts of interesting people and play underground music you probably don't know but should. So what's stopping you? Subscribe on iTunes.
Joy Bomb.
If it's good enough for Sister Bang Bang, it's good enough for you.
Ready at the back there, it's time for Sister Bang Bang's Quick Six.
It is Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang, and Systematic sat here waiting for Bang Bang's Quick Six. Are you ready to play Bang Bang's Quick Six?
I am.
You're a little unsure there, and that's probably a wise emotion to take on in this case. Bang Bang's Quick Six, six quick questions. The answers can take as long as you like, okay? The only rule being you can't ask for clarification on these questions. Are you clear on that?
I am clear on that.
It's nothing too difficult, I have to say. First question, tea or coffee?
Coffee. Because it makes me nice and sort of jangly. Tea is a calmative. Coffee sort of gets me going.
And yet, strange enough, that they say there's more caffeine in tea than there is in coffee.
Yes, I can. I'm an empiricist. I can only say that coffee gets me going. I do drink tea. I drink a lot of tea, but I think had I got to choose the two, it would be coffee.
Okay, and cheers, because that's what we're doing at the moment.
Indeed,
lovely. Okay, that's the first one down. You see, wasn't that difficult?
That was good. Yes, that was relatively painless.
Lead you into a sense of false security. It's Bang Bang's Quick Six. Question number two now. Vegetable or meat? Veg or meat?
Meat. I'm not sure I can answer that. Because I'm a red-blooded person. And I love meat, particularly when it's got a pulse in it.
Yeah. A pulse that's still going?
Yes.
Are we getting overtones of a sexual nature here?
We might be, yes. We may very well be. A happy reverie, to be honest, as I say. I just can't get down these days.
Lovely. Okay, Bang Bang's Quick Six. Number three. Question number three. Bitch or butch?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a Billy both ways in that respect. I suppose my boyfriend likes to think that I'm butch.
You're the only one that does.
Yeah, but all things are relative compared with my boyfriend. I am like Harrison Ford rather than Betty Ford.
It's not the words out of my mouth.
Yes, I think one of the amusing things about being your sister is the sort of whole ambiguity and gender fluidity and all the rest of it, and the fact that you just mind fuck everybody. Because if you are actually, if you exclude the fact that I'm in a pink organza ball gown, I am actually quite a butch person. Although the Betty Boop tattoo on my arm is probably a little bit camp. But I actually come across as reasonably butch, and that's one of the things that sort of really tends to play with people's heads. Where, you know, the nun really does fuck with people's heads in a way that most of the costumes wouldn't do, because you, first of all, you're an authority figure who is evidently being very, very subversive. You're this sort of emblem of purity and innocence that's being very slutty and raucous. The habit has a sort of anonymising effect, which, first of all, sort of can put people off slightly, but it also makes it easy for some people to communicate with you. it's a very, very odd thing. But one of the things about that is then, well, actually, yes, you can be as feminine or as masculine as you want within in habit and to suit the moment. I mean, one of the things that amused me is there's a friend of the nuns, Gracie Goggins, who's this big muscle mare. I mean, huge. You take so many steroids, you've got a face like Buzz Lightyear. And this big tattooed ginger witch. And if you saw him sort of down a dark alley, you would crap yourself until he opened his mouth. Hiya, love. And Gracie used to, when she was dancing up the disco, this is going to be completely lost on the recording, you sort of danced like that. She was so muscular that she couldn't actually articulate her body properly.
So sort of like fists up about head level.
Fists up and sort of rocking from side to side. Until ABBA came on. She said, oh, girls! And suddenly she just became this dancing queen. I think the great thing is, I suppose one of the points of the sort of, being one of the gays is actually you can be bitch or butch whenever you want.
Yeah. And certainly there's a lot of bitchiness in our sort of profession.
For sure, yes. Yes.
I mean, I could be ironic and just say this is a little bit, but no, there's an awful lot.
Oh, no. There's a huge amount of venom and bile out there, yes. Yes, use it creatively. Channel it. Channel your anger.
I'm talking about channeling the creativity and the bitchiness, of course. We've got the Parish Magazine, which you edit, don't you?
Yes, I'm editrix of both the Parish Magazine and a slightly more substantial magnum opus, the Polari Bible, which for those listeners who aren't familiar with it, Polari's the lost language of gay men. It's a gay slang that used to be used, particularly in London, for a couple of hundred years up until the mid-late 1960s with the law reforms. And it sort of became popular with Julian and Sandy around the Horn, who played by Kenneth Williams and Hugh Paddock, who were these two outrageously camp homosexuals, actually in real life as well, who used to have this spot each week, which always featured some sort of business venture that was patronised by Kenneth Horn, which is always bone or something or other. Anyway, so Polari Bible, translation of the Bible into Polari. But the Parish Magazine, Round Your Parts, yes, I edit that. It's mostly written by the black babies at the orphanage, or the older ones of them, who have the scrivening fakements that's typewriters, to produce it. I merely stitch it all together and sort of try and understand it. But I was having a look at that word search. I just can't get anything in that at all.
Yeah, the word search being just a crossword that's filled in, but you've got to sort of do it in reverse.
Yeah, something like that. Seth the gardener did it, and I just apparently said somebody. I just can't understand any of it. I really can't.
But if anybody wants to give it a go, then if you go to our website, which is www.themanchestersisters.org, and you can download a copy of the Parish Gazette and go for the word search, which is page 12, I do believe. He says Easter-related words, but I don't think Easter really comes into it an awful lot, is there?
I found Easter egg in there.
Did you?
Somewhere.
I came across anal douche at one point.
What's one of those?
I don't know, maybe something to keep your nose cavities clean, isn't it? Is that nasal douche?
Possibly, possibly. I really wouldn't know. I'd have to speak to Seth.
Yes, anyway, yes. www.themanchestersisters.org if you fancy giving it a go. Now, we're in Bang Bang's Quick Six. We're moving on to question four now.
You're listening to Sister Bang Bang's Quick Six.
For you, Systematic, will it be money or fame?
Well, I suspect, to be honest, I'm not going to get a huge amount of either.
Infamy, maybe.
Yeah, infamy. They've all got it, infamy. Yes, notoriety, I think, would probably be... I would settle for, yes.
Why?
Well, I think money's overrated to me. Not that I've ever really had enough of it to tell, but money just really doesn't interest me that much at all, I'm afraid. Fun does. Fame doesn't interest me either particularly. Although it is quite interesting. I mentioned the Polari Bible earlier. It's quite interesting to sort of go around when people learn that you're a sister. Oh, do you know that the sisters translated the Bible into Polari? Mm. It's just always quite amusing to have an underground success on my hands.
Right. Do you ever point out that actually it was part and parcel of your...
Well, yes, occasionally, or sometimes just think, I'll just say, oh, really? Oh, never knew that. But, I mean, the thing that is probably going to bring me the greatest fame is we are actually working on a translation of the Polari Koran at the moment.
I think we need extra strong bolts on the vestry doors, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, I am having visions of being chased down Deansgate by a group of men waving curvy swords, shouting, Aloha Akbar, yes.
Oh, right. I suppose you could say
we've got to dive something.
But I suppose that's, yeah, as you say, infamy, it being infamous or something. But, yeah, that can bring money.
Oh, indeed, yes. As I say, money really doesn't do it for me. It never has.
Does for me.
Quite possibly, dear. But you see, we're an order of poverty. And chastity as well, which is...
We're failing on both those counts, aren't
yes,
we?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm succeeding remarkably well on the poverty count.
Oh, I mean, saying money from a point of view, we do raise rather an awful lot for charity.
Yeah, I mean, for those of those people that have never met us, what we do is we are entirely self-financing, that is. So, stuff for the sisters themselves, so your habit, your shoes, your makeup, all that sort of stuff, you pay for yourself. So it actually costs you money to be a sister. And then what we do is when we do go out fundraising, we do so on behalf of a particular charity. So one that we do quite a lot for these days is George House Trust, which is an HIV charity in the northwest of England. And we just take out sealed buckets and give them GHC the sealed buckets at the end of the night. That way, firstly, we don't have to be organised enough to have bank accounts and auditors and things like that. And secondly, we can never be, there can never be any sort of suspicion that there's anything untoward's ever happened. And I think it just suits everybody all ways round.
And probably the right decision in many ways. He can't trust us with much money.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a discussion that we have every couple of years. Oh, do we get bank accounts? The only time I've ever received any money was we got a community grant from a Healthy Gay Manchester, HGM, years ago. And we opened a bank account, and it sat in the bank account literally until Yorkshire Bank were threatening to close the bank account down because it was dormant, because we were never organised enough to use it. And so in the end, we did debate about, well, do we just send them a cheque back for the money, but we decided, no, that would just cause far, far, far too much trouble. And so we ended up spending it on some... forget what it was. It was some material, some printing materials, or some printed literature, or something we did years and years ago. But it was basically the only way we could get rid of it in the end.
We could do with that now, couldn't we? Really, to get some posters out. Right, now moving on. Bang Bang's quick six, and question five: mum or dad?
Ooh, difficult. Difficult. I would say dad.
Okay.
I mean, I had a sort of fairly ordinary upbringing in the wilds of rural Yorkshire, which is an interesting place to grow up gay. Close to both parents, but I think they're both now long dead, and I think the one that I sort of probably miss more, if you put me in the invidious position of having to choose between them, is probably my dad.
Right. What sort of qualities did he bring then to you?
He was an original thinker, shall we say.
Right.
A non-conformist. Very, very. He also inculcated a deep suspicion of religion and any sort of hierarchy and organisation, and always sort of taught me to question things and think for myself.
Great quality, that, isn't it? When, especially when you've got a parent to help you along that path.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most useful thing that my parents, both of them, gave me, is the sort of having an independence of mind. So they're scrupulously careful not to indoctrinate me in any sort of particular political or religious or any other sort of belief, and basically I would make up my mind when the time came to it. And I think that sort of independence of mind and the sort of encouragement to go and find things out for myself and to think for myself actually is a very, very useful gift to take with you into life.
Free the bird.
Sorry?
Free the bird.
Indeed, yes. Indeed.
Moving into... last question now. Number 6 in Bang Bang's Quick 6. Glitter or tweed?
Ooh, glitter or tweed.
A little pursing of the lips there, eh, Sister?
Ooh, yes, yes. You see, I would say glitter and tweed. We had talking of tweed, again, one of these surreal moments. Some years ago, you can tell how long ago this is, the Hollywood Show Bar, when Julia Grant ran it. So this must be going back 10, 12 years, something like that. Probably more. And we're out collecting for World AIDS Day. And Julie was absolutely great with the sisters and with the whole sort of trans community and all the rest of it. And we went into Hollywood Show Bar rattling buckets for whoever it was. And upstairs there was a piano bar which was being rented out for this private function. And it was rented out by this organisation called the Northern Concord, which is a club for the more mature tranny. And it was absolutely hilarious because you end up there and it's like a Margaret Rutherford convention. And there's all these sort of old dears in like tweed suits and twin set and pearls. It was delightful. But yes, and all these little liver-spotted hands holding glasses of creme de menthe. I suppose years ago it would have been glitter. Probably these days I am tending more to tweed as I get older.
That'd be quite nice, can you have sort of black and grey tweed as for a habit?
You've just planted a seed of an idea there. Ooh. Yes, yes. You see, as I become older, I'm sort of starting to think a lot more practical. So now when I buy things, I always think, ooh, how easy will that be to keep clean? Or, ooh, that's a very sensible design. So I think I'm gradually moving, sort of swinging further and further towards tweed. And therefore think, yes, perhaps a tweed habit would probably be more appropriate these days, yes.
I think you'd look fabulous, that. You get the right sort of shade of colours going on, yes. And a nice pleat.
# tweed nun. I think that could look quite fetching, yes. Mm. Yes, it might be a bit warm, though.
Yes.
Given how warm just an ordinary cotton habit is, I think it would be it would be a bit unbearable, but yes.
It could be a tweed print, and then you get away from the wooliness and the too warm.
Oh no! If you're going to do it, you do it properly. I'm sorry, there are no half measures, I'm afraid.
I'd then suggest lots of underskirts, which would then billow it out, and lots of air passing through your legs.
Well, the other thing as well is I suspect you'd have to have the skirt lined, because otherwise it would be very, very scratchy. So you've got me thinking now. I shall have a word with the Mistress of Habits, see what we can do.
Marvellous. Well, that was Bang Bang's Quick 6. See, it wasn't too bad, was it?
That was relatively painless, yes.
You're listening to Chinwag with Sister Bang Bangladesh, that's moi, and Sister Matic, that's her.
Instagram. Yes, your sister is on Instagram, and it's the only way to see all my wonderful, gorgeous photos. And some of them are even suitable for your mother to see, but not many. So, prod your finger over to Instagram and find me, Sister Bang Bang Ladesh. You know you want to. Malicious gossip, wicked chit-chat, and nothing but the whole truth. It's Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang. Goodbye.
It is Chinwag, absolutely right, with yours truly, Sister Bang Bangladesh, and my very special guest today, Systematic Debauchery, is that correct?
Yes, hello dears.
Now, you mentioned a little bit before about the fascinating language Polari. Now, you tried and tried and tried to get me indoctrinated into this. But let's go back a little. You mentioned before that it came out... Well, no, you tell me. Where did it come out of? Remind me.
Well, Polari is an argot. It's a slang which is designed to conceal meaning from non-initiates. And it's derived from... Well, it dates back hundreds of years. It was originally a thing called a thieves' cant, and it has words borrowed and corrupted from French, Romany, Italian, Cockney rhyming slang, Cockney backslang, etc., etc. And it was basically used originally in the theatre in London, later on in the theatre in London, and then obviously because of the theatrical connections, became extensively used on the London gay scene. And it's one of these, because there is no official Polari language, and because it's sort of particularly because it's an underground language, it's a very fluid language. It constantly changes. And it was in fairly widespread use until about sort of mid-late 60s on the gay scene. And obviously it was originally used to conceal meaning. The idea is obviously two gay men could have a conversation about something with an outsider having no idea what they were talking about.
Can you give us an example of that?
Varda the lallies on that Schwarze Omi Ajax, boner.
Which translates as?
Look at the legs on that coloured gentleman over there. Very nice.
So it was a way of, I don't know, being secretive then, being overt.
Homosexuality was, of course, criminal in those days. And it allowed, it was a slang that allowed people to talk. Now, since 67, well, I think before 67, but particularly since, it's been used principally because it's got tremendous comic value. It is wonderful for sort of pricking the pomposity of a lot of the people on the gay scene. So there's some wonderful Polari expressions. I mean, two of my favourites are, if you're referring to a sort of a big butch queen that sort of thinks he's butch, that's a manly Alice. Right. And the police are referred to either as Betty Bracelets or Hilda Handcuffs. And there's just all sorts of absolutely wonderful, very, very sort of subversive expressions there. And actually, there is probably quite a lot of Polari that you already know, that you never think about.
Well, it's strange you mention that, because it is odd that You do come up with words and somebody will say, that's Polari, and you think, oh, I just thought it was part of our English language.
Yeah, I mean, Polari is borrowed from other things. So, for example, within Polari, how bona tavadi your dolly old eek is how lovely to see your pretty old face. Eek, of course, is Cockney backslang. Eekaf, face, backwards.
Right.
Like eefink is knife backwards. So that's something that's been borrowed from Cockney. But there's other words which have been actually given from Polari into mainstream use, like chicken or naff. They're both very old, very old Polari words.
Right. You just don't think of it, you know, you say chicken, you know, look at that chicken over there. You don't think of that as being anything other than English, do you?
Well, indeed, it's this is the interesting thing. It's crossed from Polari into sort of mainstream gay English. Mm. But if you say to you talk to the average person in the street and say, if I say a chicken, what do you think of? They think of an oven-ready thing from Marks and Spencer's. But yes, I mean, it's a fluid language. It's like, you know, English generally, it will borrow stuff that's useful. And when it's no longer useful, it will die out. And there's, you know, so for example, one modern phrase that's entered Polari is Jar Jar, which means...
Not from Star Wars, eh?
No. As in Jar Jar Gabor. So to Jar Jar somebody is to hit them. And it refers to Jar Jar Gabor about 10, 15 years ago. She assaulted a policeman, was arrested for assaulting a policeman. Although my favourite word for assaulting or hitting somebody is to batty-fang them. Batty-fang. Which sort of, you have just visions of the... Sorry, that's completely lost on the...
Almost like a seal flapping its flappers.
Yes, sort of flapping at each other and hissing. But yes, or another good one is to ferricadooza somebody, which is to ferricadooza, which is to sort of knock them down, render them unconscious. But it's that absolutely fascinating language, and unfortunately, almost dead. So the Manchester sisters, so principal myself and also Sister Gypsy, have done sort of quite a lot of work to preserve and record it. There's also an academic at Lancaster University, Professor Paul Baker, whose PhD was in Polari. So he's probably done more to sort of preserve and record it than anybody else. He produced a very good book, probably about 10 years ago, called Fantabulosa, which is a dictionary of Polari and gay slang. But again, that's just a snapshot of it as it was back then. There's also been a move among some of the sort of London queens to reclaim Polari. So back in the sort of 70s, 80s, it was considered... Because the gays, we took ourselves very seriously and decided that Polari was a relic of oppression or some other shite, and therefore didn't want, you know, its use was frowned upon. And I'm glad to say that it's sort of been reclaimed by another generation of young people. Whether it will ever... I think it will continue to go on, particularly... As I say, just for its tremendous sort of camp put down value. I mean, nobody, thank goodness, ever needs to use it as a serious secret language any longer. Things have moved on.
You can't imagine the 10 o'clock news on the BBC being done in Polari, or maybe you can.
Well, yes. As I suspect you are aware from your question. The sisters occasionally, just out of badness, do various things. And some years ago, the BBC published a request for consultation on what it was to do in the next few years, and asked for submissions from various people or organisations interested. So the Manchester sisters actually submitted their own suggestions as to what the BBC should do, which included a BBC channel called BBC Ada, which was basically designed for elderly drag queens and the older gay men, and would basically have reruns of the Antiques Roadshow and various things on it. But there would also be news in Polari. And we also insisted that at least one of the sort of serious heavyweight correspondents on BBC News should be a drag queen. And do it fully dragged up. Needless to say, the bastards never even replied.
Well, maybe they're just storing it up for another day. One would hope.
Well, one would certainly hope so. It's a long journey.
Systematic, it's been an absolute joy chatting with you and finding out more about you, more about Polari, and just having a good chin wag as well.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Nice talking to all the gathered faithful.
Lastly, I have to ask, what would you like on your gravestone?
Ooh. Well, now, I mentioned that my father was a rather sort of deeply non-conformist. And he threw various people into utter confusion because he doesn't have a grave. He actually willed his body to medical research, which completely threw the hospital, the registrar, and various people into a complete tailspin because they'd never heard of it. So actually, I'm probably going to will my body to medical research, so there probably won't be a gravestone. If there were, I think it would be, I've had a ball.
And so to the epilogue. I've often wondered why we get angry. I mean, it doesn't really seem to help, does it? Now, I'm not out to preach here. It really is a genuine question. For example, I was in a mad rush the other day and I couldn't find my keys anywhere. Looked high and low and they were not to be found. I then methodically went from one room to another. Then rifled through every pocket in every pair of jeans I own. Nothing. And I got angry. Like shouting angry. In fact, I was shouting with my voice at myself. If you're a psychologist, I could always feel your ears pricking up now. I was rather late at this point. Inanimate things were on the verge of being incinerated by my now lethal stare. If I'd had a lightsaber, the convent would now resemble Lego bricks. Then my phone started to ring, deliberately trying to make things worse, of course. I went to pick the damn thing up and sitting smugly next to it was, yes, you've guessed, that offensive bunch of keys. And I could feel the red mist descend and evaporate. On the bus into town, I got thinking yet again as to why my body felt the need to ramp itself up into such an unneeded frenzy. So I rang my mum. She listened as I recounted what was now a fun anecdote. Well, she said, all that fuss, they're bound to have been somewhere. And she's right, as most mums are. I've searched for many things in my life, and her few words really did snap me back into focus. I just need to carry on searching. This time, not for keys, though. Lots of love. Bang, bang.
Coming up on the next edition of Chinwag.
Manchester's outrageous gay scene has got up to all sorts of shenanigans over the years, and one woman has been through its highs and its lows. Part of Manchester Pride for many years and owner of the fabulous Vanilla Bar, Steph Kay joins me on the very next episode of...
Chinwag.